We are in Colossians chapter 3. Let me throw out a scenario to you, and if you're a parent, maybe you've been here, done that kind of a thing before, but I'm going to kind of put myself in the story a little bit. So I'm heading home from work, dads. Maybe this is something that you've experienced before. You're heading home from work. You're all excited to get home. Walk in the door. Actually, before you walk in the door, you can hear something outside the house. And you know it's not good when you walk up to the house and you can hear something before you get into the house, and it sounds distinctly like one of your children screaming at the top of their lungs. Ever been there? So you walk in the house, and the first thing that you see is your wife's face, and you can immediately tell that it's not been a very good day. Her face says it all. It says, I'm done with this. I've thought about running out of the house a couple times today and screaming, just kind of running down the road. Not that this has ever happened. This is a hypothetical situation, all right? I promise you, this is not, parts of this may be true, but the whole thing is not true, okay? So before you begin projecting any of this on Abby, just be aware. I'm imagining what this would be like. So you walk in, your wife says it all, her face, and she just has this hollow stare. She's like, help me, please. So you walk in the room, your one child is screaming on the floor, you're not sure what has happened. The best you can tell from what your wife is telling you, from what they're telling you, is that brother hit sister, and sister took brother's toy, and one of them is laying on the floor screaming, throwing a fit. The other is obediently coloring and being very sweet, saying, hi, Daddy. And you know that that's a cover for something else. But so you continue to try to talk to the one child on the floor, and you try to get something out of him. He continues to scream, continues to throw a fit. He's not responding to you. In fact, he begins throwing and kicking things at you. And that's where your anticipation of being home is now met with, I wish I was an hour late for work, right? So you begin trying to help him out, and it's becoming obvious to you that this is not going to work. And so you begin to be frustrated, and you get drug into the drama, and you start getting a little snippy with him. You start getting a little bit louder, and before you know it, you're in a shouting match. And it just kind of escalates the whole situation until finally, maybe you send him to his room, maybe you spank him really good, sit him in time out, maybe you yell, maybe you say some things you wish you shouldn't have said. Maybe you do some things you wish you wouldn't have done because you lost your temper in that moment and you allowed yourself to get drug into the drama of the situation in the moment. Sound familiar? At all? Anyone that has had children ever been there, done that? Maybe not that exact scenario, okay, we're raising hands, right? Everybody's raising their hands, because to some degree, even if you are the most calm, collected, cool parent, and I always admire those parents that they can talk so calmly, you know, they just even keeled. I guarantee you, no matter how calm and collected you are, at some point, you lose it with your kids, right? Because it's just what happens to us as people. James Dobson, one of my mom's favorite people in the world. I'm pretty sure she read every James Dobson Focus on the Family book growing up when we were kids, trying to figure out how in the world do I do this, right? Because as a parent, you don't get a manual for this. You've got to figure it out. I remember when we were taking Hannah home for the first time, they just kind of loaded her into the car and we drove off. And I'm like, I don't have to sign anything? I mean, I don't have to sign a waiver or report in every week, say this is how it's going. I mean, they just give me this kid, right? There's no manual for these little guys. You've got to figure it out on your own. So my mom read James Dobson. Like, I'm pretty sure I have all the James Dobson hand-me-down books now, because she's like, here, read this, read this, read this. James Dobson wrote a book, maybe some of you are familiar if you like Focus on the Family at all, called Parenting Isn't for Cowards. Anybody familiar with this book? Parenting Isn't for Cowards? Okay. And it's all about how to buck up and be a parent, right? Because it's not for the faint of heart. And James Dobson in this book tells a story, a true story, of a particular family down the street from he and Shirley, his wife, when they were raising their children. And this particular family, about the same age, had a young boy who was known as the hellion of the street. You know, the little rebel that was always getting into everybody else's business, always causing mischief and trouble in the neighborhood, and would never listen to mom and dad. And so James Dobson tells this story of observing one day this interaction between boy and mom. Boy was riding his tricycle in the driveway, and he kept running out in the street. driving out in the street, driving out the street. Mom was warning him, stop riding out in the street, son. Cars are coming. You're going to get hit. Stop riding out in the street, son. He wouldn't listen. So finally, mom marches outside, grabs hold of the trike, says, stop running out in the street. To which the boy replied, get your dirty hands off my tricycle. The moment of truth, right? What will she do? So Dr. Dobson, as any good neighbor would, when you hear something going on like this outside of your house, is observing from the window quietly. You know what? To his surprise, mother took her hands off of the tricycle and walked back inside. Because she didn't want to deal with it, right? It didn't matter that Junior could possibly have an accident, that he could wreck his trike in front of a car and get hurt. She had become so frazzled, so at her wits' end about what to do with this child, that it was easier for her to walk away from the situation than it was to handle it and try to deal with it as it came. And all of us, I think, as parents have had similar situations where we should have done this, we should have stood our ground, and we backed off, we were too easy, or maybe we went overboard with things because we weren't sure exactly how to handle the situation. If you've had kids, you've been in these situations before. And the question always comes up, how do you have a healthy relationship with a child when you feel frustrated half the time? Right? Some kids are just easy, and they don't need much. But then there are the other kids that constantly you've got to be on them about stuff all the time. How do you deal with that? How do you have a good relationship with this child? Colossians 3 this morning is where we're going to be. And in the latter half of the chapter, Paul gets into some detailed relationships where we've already talked about some of this. He has already gone over how to be a good husband, how to be a good wife in the home. And if you remember back several weeks earlier, the beginning of the chapter is really what Paul is dealing with, where he says, if you've been raised with Christ, then set your mind on things above. And it talks about putting off the old man, putting on the new man, and how to get rid of some of these things in your life and how to put on some of these fruit of the Spirit. And as he gets down to the end of the chapter, what Paul is doing, even though it seems disconnected, is he's actually getting into the details of life as to how do I actually live this out in my relationships? How do I live in the new man with these people that I get to be in contact with all the time in my life? My husband, my wife, my kids. Later we'll talk about the slave-master relationship, which is a little unique for us, but Paul is really dealing with the same thing, the home. Because, here's the deal, the home is one of the most difficult places to live this out, to gain control of, is it not? Because if I'm truly living in the new man, the people that are going to know it the most are those at home. And if I'm not living in the new man, if I'm not putting on these things of the Spirit, if I'm not living in humility and compassion and gentleness and kindness and patience and forgiveness and love, then the folks that I live with at home are going to know it first. You can hide a bunch of stuff here at church, and we do it every day. You walk in this morning and you have a happy face on, and how many of you, I know this happened because of the amount of people in this room, how many of you argued on the way to church? How many of you said something you should have to your spouse this morning as you got ready? How many of you had an argument last night with your kids where you said something out of line with them or did something out of line with them? It just happens. People that we live around every day of our lives are those that get the most of who we really are. And sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes that's a bad thing. It always used to crack me up when I would see the freshmen coming in at Ohio Valley University every fall, the new freshmen. And I was an RA for a year, so I had to interact with a lot of freshman students. And Johnny would come with Bobby, and Johnny would say, hey, this is my friend Bobby, and we've been best friends for our whole life, and we're going to be roommates together. You're laughing, right? Because you know what happens next. 2 months later, Johnny and Bobby aren't speaking together anymore, because it's different when you live together. You can be the best friend that you ever wanted to be with somebody, but until you live in proximity with that person in the same house, under the same roof, doing things every moment of every day together, you don't know exactly that relationship, how it's going to work. And so the home is one of the most difficult places in life to get control over. And if you have children, raising children is stressful. I'm sure you've seen this happen, or you've done this yourself. your marriage is struggling or somebody else's marriage is struggling, and the solution is, let's have a kid. Right? Because that makes everything better. It'll bond us together. It'll give us a project to work on together, right? It'll help us do things together. And then you find out, oh my goodness gracious, this is the most stressful thing I've ever done. This makes everything more complicated. And so Paul is dealing with these relationships. First, he's already talked about husbands and wife. We talked about that a couple weeks ago with the love and respect. And now he moves to children and fathers. And this is important as we go forward in this lesson. It's important to note that Paul is dealing directly with fathers here. There are some applications that we could draw to mothers and parents in general, but it's important to remember that Paul is dealing specifically with fathers because there's a reason. The reason being is that fathers have a unique role in parenting. Not more important than, more vital than a mom, both equally important. But fathers often experience challenges in parenting that mothers just don't seem to have as often. Some of those challenges are just in how we relate as males to children. Dads, how many times have you found it difficult to relate to your children, whereas mom, it just seems like she naturally does it? Moms have that nurturing tendency, or that nurture tendency that they have, to relate well with all ages, and guys, we just seem to struggle. Maybe it's a phase that we go through with a particular child at a particular life stage. We just feel like we're disconnected from them, and sometimes it's easier for us as dads, as fathers, as men, to disconnect from the family in a time that they most need us. And so Paul will speak specifically to fathers here with something that's a unique challenge to fathers. But he'll start with the children. And so he says in verse 20, "Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord." Now, before I go any further with this, it's important because the question always comes up, at what point does a child stop obeying parents? Like in an abusive situation, if there's a danger in the home, do they continue to subject themselves to their parents' cruelty and punishment and abuse and maybe physical harm or danger? I don't think these are situations that Paul is dealing with here. I think we have to be practically minded. I don't think Paul has in mind that the child is in danger of their life or danger of their health. You might remember a situation where Jesus is talking to fathers to parents. In Matthew chapter 7, he says, "What kind of father, if their child comes up to them and asks them for a fish, gives them a snake instead?" Right? Good fathers give good things to their children. And Paul has the assumption here that this is what we're talking about. We're not talking about abusive scenarios where the child literally shouldn't be in the home any longer because they're in danger of their life. Okay? With that being said, though, society's view of children has changed a little bit, if you can imagine that, from Paul's day to ours. In the first century in Paul's world, children had a high mortality rate, largely because there was a high rate of infanticide. I'm going to say that wrong, but infanticide. Meaning parents would often, if they didn't want the child, would leave their child somewhere and walk away for the child to die. You know, it's a unique thing that we are talking about, the role, and at what point does life happen, right? With the pro-choice and pro-life movements in our country, we're talking about all the abortion laws and regulations and what do we believe about life? When does life start? Some would say life starts at conception. As soon as that sperm and that egg get together and make a living organism, that's life. Some would say, well, it's not till a heartbeat. Some would say, well, it's not till they get to consciousness. Some would say, well, it's not till they come out of the womb. There's all sorts of stages and ages. But did you know in Roman culture, in Paul's day, none of that was when life occurred. Life occurred after birth when the father accepted the child into the home as a member of the family. Until that happened, the child was not a human being. And that's how they got around. That's why there was such a high rate of infant mortality, because if mom and dad decided, hey, we can't take care of this child financially, specifically girls were a lot in this situation because of the financial obligations with a dowry when they eventually would marry. Parents would have to provide a gift to go with the husband and their daughter. So if mom and dad decided, hey, we can't afford this child, before dad accepted the child into the home, they would find the city dump, a trash heap somewhere outside of town, and they would leave the child. And this was acceptable in culture in Roman, in Paul's day. Children were often seen as an economic hardship. Large families were rare. Children were seen as property. Their status was little better than a slave. They were seen as an economic thing for the parents to continue the family line or something like that. But the cool thing is that Christianity comes along and changes all this. Because in the Christian worldview, life is precious. And so a lot of these Christians would go outside to the trash heaps outside of town and they would find these babies that had been left for dead and they would take them in. Modern day orphanages are the ancestors of the Christian movement that began with taking some of these children in, caring for them, providing for them. In the Christian worldview, children were seen as a blessing. They were given their own sense of will and decision making instead of being property. And it's interesting here, we'll get to this in a minute, but Paul speaks specifically to children, which would have been unheard of in his day. Because children weren't given their own thoughts to do or to say or to be their own person. They were under the care of the parents as their property. But children are to obey parents. Paul is saying here something that we're familiar with all the way back in the Old Testament, right? Exodus 20, do you remember the Ten Commandments? Honor your father and your mother. And so Paul is drawing from a long history in his religion of honoring parents, obeying parents. And it's interesting that he says, in all things, whether it's fair or not, and those of us who maybe, the kids that are still in this room, sometimes it's hard to obey mom and dad when things don't seem fair, right? And that's something that parents often hear, well, it's not fair, right? And then you say, life's not fair, right? Well, it's the standard response. And yet, Paul says, you do this because it pleases the Lord. Not because it seems fair or not. Not because it seems right or not in your own judgment. It's because this pleases the Lord. He'll continue this kind of a thought process at the end in 17 when he talks about doing everything to the glory of God. Because whatever you do, whether it's obeying parents, whether it's loving and submitting to your husband, whether it's loving your wife and caring for her, you do this because it pleases the Lord. And then he turns to fathers. He says, fathers, verse 21, do not provoke your children lest they become discouraged. Ephesians 6 has a parallel passage to this where Paul will say the same thing basically. He says, fathers, don't provoke your children to anger. The first statement of Paul, children obey your parents, wouldn't have been totally out of the question. Children were expected to obey parents, but Paul's statement to fathers would have seemed odd in his day. Because in Roman culture, in Paul's day, the fathers held absolute authority in the home, and no one was ever to question what they did at all. They would be seen somewhat similar to maybe more of a tyrant today than anything. They were authoritarian, they were overbearing at times, and they were given the full backing of the law. They could do whatever they wanted to bring their children in line in whatever way they felt necessary. And some of that we would probably view as child abuse today. And there was no child protective services to step in. Fathers were given absolute authority and probably by today's standards would be abusive. Many fathers were often subjected their children to harsh discipline, some even to forced labor. But Paul here is holding fathers accountable for their actions. Not just children to obey, but fathers to act in such a way that would make it the easiest way possible for their children to listen. Isn't it easy for parents, especially fathers, to drive children to frustration and anger? Have you ever found yourself making a situation worse as a parent, as a father, when you discipline your child because you let your anger get in the way or you let your frustration vent a little bit in the situation? Let's be honest. Disciplining can get the best of us at times. You react versus respond to your child's own drama and you get sucked into the problem. Full disclosure, this happened to us last night. I was driving back from Abby's grandmother's 95th birthday party. happy day. Abby's mother's mother is still alive and celebrated 95 years yesterday. So we were a long day. Kids were out for a while, and this always makes it hard when you have kids that have been out and missed naps, and so everybody's tired and frustrated. So we stayed longer than we were planned on staying. We were driving back, and brother's crying in the back seat. He's tired. And we kept telling Hannah, stop messing with your brother. Stop torturing him. You know, the poke, 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 make it worse. And things had been quiet for a while, and all of a sudden I hear brother again, screaming. And I look in the back, and there's this pillow that's waving down in front of brother's car seat, like this. And that was just it. You know, I just kind of snapped. I jerked around like this, grabbed that pillow as fast as I could, and Abby's like, what are you doing? You know, she didn't know where. I pulled the car over and walked around, and we took care of things. But afterwards, and things were really quiet from there on out, right? It was a quiet trip home from there on out. But Abby and I kind of processed it afterwards. I got home, and we got the kids in bed, and Abby starts brushing her teeth. It's like 9 o'clock. I'm like, you going to bed? She's like, yeah, after all that, I'm going to bed. So we processed it a little bit. She's like, you just kind of lost it there for a minute. I wouldn't say you did the wrong thing, but how you did it. She said, you gritted your teeth. Your nostrils started flaring. And my face said more than it should have. Right? I got drug into the emotional part of the discipline. Now, if I had to go back and do it again, probably would have done the same thing, but I would have done it differently. Not allowed the drama and the emotions to get the best of me. And so we react more than we should. Instead of responding and de-escalating the situation. And disciplining can often become, for fathers especially, an outlet for our own unresolved issues. Maybe our own issues with how we were disciplined growing up. Mom and dad, not the best of parents. Didn't always do discipline right. Maybe got a little too harsh with us. Beat us a little bit too much. And so we allow that as much as we told ourselves we would never do that with our children. That's how we respond. We find ourselves doing the same things. Maybe marital frustrations. Things are hard with our spouse. And then we find ourselves taking that frustration out on our children. Maybe things are not great at work. Stressful, long hours. Don't know if you're going to have a job next week. And all of a sudden, you find that frustration following you home. And fathers, and this is why Paul will say this to fathers, because as the more powerful individual, the physically stronger, physically larger, if you're not Scott McFarlane, but most dads are just physically bigger than their kids. And so it's easy to use that size and that voice that you have to bully, to provoke. Many of us have watched or been involved in a situation firsthand with a father berating their children in public and going a little bit too far and humiliating them. Makes for an awkward situation. I watched a video this past week. It was a security camera video. It was in Miami somewhere in a school system, the school office. What had happened was there was a teenage girl that was kind of being a little bit too much in class, and so she had been sent to the office, and dad was called. Dad was a police officer, big guy. And you can see this all on camera. He comes in. You see him speaking for just a second. And all of a sudden, he grabs his daughter by the hair, brings her over to the window, starts getting in her face and yelling at her, and then smacking her right in front of the school staff. Obviously, no matter what happened, that's a little bit too much, right? Inappropriate discipline for a person of that age. And yet, this is so easy for fathers to do. And so the question is, how do we relate? How should we relate as children and fathers, parents and fathers together? What is Paul's desire? Paul's desire goes back to the beginning of the chapter for each member of the household to live and reflect the new self. Let me just read this for you again, because it's been a while. starting in verse 12, the new man. Put on then, as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness and patience, bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other, as the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. And above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony, and let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which you indeed were called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs with thanksgiving in your heart to God. And whatever you do, in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. Children in obedience, fathers in fair punishment and discipline of the child. And it's easy for us to get into this cycle, and we talked about it the last time, of he's not, she's not, so I'm not. He's not being a good husband, so I'm not going to be a good wife. She's not being an obedient, respectful daughter, so she doesn't deserve my respect. Whatever the situation may be. And so we get into this crazy cycle that we talked about with Emerson Eggerich's Love and Respect book, where there's a lack of love, there's a lack of respect, which leads to a lack of love, which leads to a lack of respect, and it goes on and on and on. And we can get in these cycles with children and fathers and parents. Paul says both of you should do this regardless. Children, obey your parents in everything, because this pleases the Lord. It's not about what's fair, it's not about what's right in your eyes, it's about pleasing the Lord. And fathers, don't provoke your children. Don't make it hard for them. No matter if they're giving you respect or not. If you want to be respected, show respect. If you want to be loved, show love. And even if you don't get what you ultimately want, in the end, whatever you do, do all for the glory of God. And so children, as I wrap this up here this morning, those of us who are children, what kind of a son and daughter are you? Are you obedient? Are you fulfilling the commandment of God in submission even when things are tough, when it doesn't make sense? And parents, specifically fathers, what kind of a disciplinarian are you? How do you handle your children when they're out of line? Do you discipline out of anger and love or love? Do you taunt or jab, embarrass? Or do you calmly direct and guide and administer punishment? This matters, because in Matthew 18, Jesus has a discussion with his disciples about children, and he's taking a child in his arms, and he says, you must become like one of these if you want to get into the kingdom of heaven. Do you remember this conversation? What we often don't talk about is the very next statement that Jesus makes in verse 6 in chapter 18 of Matthew. He says, I tell you the truth. It says, whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and to be drowned in the depth of the sea. As adults, as parents, in our children's lives, we hold their future in our hands. And what we do with that says everything about us. And God promises to deal justly with us as we deal with our children. And so fathers, don't provoke your children. Children, obey your parents, for this is right. This morning, if you need anything, we're going to sing another song Tim's got selected for us. And we'll have a time of invitation where you can respond. If you need anything, we invite you to come as we stand and sing this song.